From the mountains to the coast, create memories, meet new people, and find your favorite wine, mead, or cider in NC. Download the NC Wine app or visit ncwine.org to plan your trip to North Carolina wine country today.
Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Matt. We're the NC Wine Guys. Welcome to Cork Talk.
This month is another Best of Cork Talk episode. This time, we're featuring Chuck and Jamie Johnson from Shadow Springs Vineyard and Windsor Run Cellars in Hamptonville. It's been 5 years since our first conversation, so they're back at the end of the episode for an update.
This episode is brought to you in part by a grant from the North Carolina Wine and Grape Council. You can learn more about the council by going to their website, ncwine.org.
So sit back, pour a glass, and listen.
All right, we're here with Chuck Johnson and Jamie Johnson of Shadow Springs Vineyard and Windsor Run Cellars. Chuck and Jamie, welcome to Cork Talk.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming.
So why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit about who you are and a little bit of your backstory.
Well, I'm Jamie, and Chuck and I have been married for a long time, going on 30 years, and I never had a crystal ball, so I never knew how I needed to prepare for the rest of my life. I might have done a few things differently, but we've been doing the vineyard now since 2000, and well, really started in 2004, seriously looking for land and choosing the place we wanted to be, and then in 2005, making the big step and planting some grapes and starting the whole venture.
So for me, I was a logistics manager. I was vice president for a Fortune 100 company and did very well. We IPO'd, and that was a good thing. We're employee owned, IPO'd. And from there, I think life was good. We had everything we needed, and I just got bored and decided that I wanted to strike out on my own and start something different. So we went from the corporate boardroom to the farm. And neither one of us had any farm experience other than a garden. Got larger and smaller as we traveled. But that's our extent of farming. We knew a couple farmers that seemed to be good people, and we thought maybe that might be fun. And we were traveling back here. We lived in Nebraska at the time. We were traveling back here, and we had friends that we went to a wine tasting with them and had a good time during that. They wanted to know if we wanted to see the winery. We said, sure. And I said, you know, it would be really fun to do this someday. And the people I were with saying, well, we're retired. We can do the research for you. We said, great. So they did the research. I was flying a lot, and so they would send me the research, and I would read it on an airplane. And then came home one day and said, what do you think about doing a vineyard? And Jamie's answer was,
I don't think it was all that positive. I said, what do we know about growing grapes and making wine?
I think the answer was, hell no.
Let me see how that turned out.
Yes. So I've always referred to this as Chuck's midlife crisis, that he kept the same wife, didn't get a sports car, so I felt obligated to follow him along, but it was definitely his vision and his passion, and I kind of had to warm up to it and figure it out.
Someday she's still warming up to it.
No, I have a whole new respect for farmers, that is for sure. You know, you don't realize where anything comes from until you're the person producing it, whether it's grapes or corn or potatoes. It just magically appears in the grocery store and you go get it. So I will say that the learning curve was huge for us. And I think that the smartest things we did were to hire people who already knew their craft, and that allowed us to learn what we were doing and to, you know, just to go along the ride with them. So.
Perfect. So now, why did you decide here?
Well, we really didn't, like Jamie said, we really didn't know what we were doing. We knew with all the research that I read on the airplanes that I've been on for years, I felt that I knew kind of what we were doing. We hired a consultant. and we went around to different areas. We looked at this land that we're on in Chattel Springs currently first, and we went to probably 25 other sites around the state, and we kept coming back to this one. We had it tested, and the consultant said it tests good, so we didn't know what quite that meant, but we knew it was not bad.
The soil was in good shape. We knew that.
So again, we went to other sites. We kept coming back to this one, and finally made the decision after testing it that this was it.
Well, and we knew from the beginning that we wanted to be in the Yadkin Valley. We wanted to be on a little bit of a trail. We didn't want to be way out where no one else was, because we saw value in being around other vineyards. So that was another part of the reason we liked this one. And we were in beautiful country, but we're talking in cow pastures where we climbed through the barbed wire fences and the cows were in there. And I was like, I do not know how anyone will ever find us out here. So we're still a little bit off the beaten path, but we are on roads with names and that are paved and not graveled. So somehow it feels a little easier to find us.
And yeah, you're not that far off the main road either. So
one vineyard spot we looked at, we had to drive into the cemetery and past the cemetery.
Walk through the cemetery.
To get to the vineyard. And we asked the realtor that when we went in, said, can you really do this? Can you get traffic in here? We wanted to, oh, sure, no problem. We just didn't feel that going through the cemetery to get to our business was a viable option.
It's a tough marketing sell.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think there could be some wines related to that, but sure. I'm not sure that we really wanted to start there.
I mean, maybe at Halloween it would
exactly.
be
exactly.
Halloween would the rest be of the our holiday. Yeah.
Yeah. So, how did Chattel Springs get the name Chattel Springs?
Well, that's a great question, because it was not our first choice. We named it. Chuck always had this vision, and it was his vision, and he wanted to name it Legacy Vineyards because we thought perhaps it would be a legacy. We could leave it to our children that they would want to continue the business. And so we did hire a lawyer and did the due diligence in North Carolina. That name we thought was clear. So we said, okay, Legacy Vineyards.
And we incorporated the name. And then we heard from Kendall Jackson. In fact, we heard from Kendall Jackson's multiple lawyers that they own the word legacy as it relates to wine.
Oh.
So we thought, well, we don't have any really publicity out there. We don't have any labels. We don't have anything. We just have a piece of land that has a few grapes that we planted on. Maybe it would be, instead of fighting Kendall Jackson, maybe it would be good to come up with another name. But as you know, there's thousands of vineyards out there with thousands of names, and it was very, very difficult to come up with something. So before the tasting room was here, my first job here was mowing. I mean, we had people that were taking care of the vineyard, but I could mow. So I was mowing one day and thinking of names. Actually, I was sitting on top of the hill where the tasting room currently sits on my tractor, looking around at the property and trying to think of a name. And I looked over to the right here, and I saw the stream through the creek, through the trees over there. And I saw a shadow, and I'm thinking, shadow. Something to do with spring shadow. And
creek.
And creek. And I had all kind of things popping through my head. Then I came up with spring shadow, and then that really shadow didn't sound creek. Right. Then we came up with Chattel Springs, and I was so excited.
Well,
I called Jamie.
With Shadow Creek first.
Well, I called Jamie with a couple names, and she said, I hate them. And I said, okay, you come up with a name. And she said, I love them. So that's kind of how Chattel Springs was born.
Yeah. And so now we really like it better than we ever liked Legacy. But even when you get something in your head, it's like, oh, now what? So, and we've used our logo with that. It almost looks like a monogram, but
sure.
The one S is backwards. That is to be the shadow of the springs with the vineyard in there. So we had some thought and some meaning back there behind that. And we worked with a local lady here in Hamptonville, Jonesville, And she helped us put all our thoughts, because we had many, but neither one of us are artistic. So get that down and into what we kind of envisioned it to be. So yeah.
And we found out that Kendall Jackson doesn't own that word. So we were good.
But Shadow Springs has some sticking factor to it.
It does.
Yes.
It does. We're very, very pleased with it.
Yeah. The alliteration's great.
Yeah. So what were the first varieties that were planted in the vineyard here at Shadow Springs?
Well, we planted in March of 2005. We planted 2 acres of Cabernet Franc and 2 acres of Merlot. Now, understand that we were still in Nebraska. I was still working my corporate job at this time, and the only ones that knew what we were doing was, of course, our children, our parents, and the people that were actually working at the vineyard. So we were in Nebraska, and I had a consulting gig here in North Carolina, and I'd fly back and forth probably once or twice a month, and I would always tack a day on, stay with Jamie's parents on the weekend, and mow the grass. So and then we actually planted the rest of the vineyard, the 6.5 acres that are in the back of it, and that was planted in April of 2006. And that gave us 10.5 total acres here.
So we added more mostly French grapes, but we did put in 2 hybrids. So we have the Cabernet Sauvignon, and we have Petit Verdot, and then the Chambertin, which is the hybrid red that we grow, and then Chardonnay, Viognier, and the hybrid Sauval Blanc. So that's what we put in our second planting.
And then we moved here July 4th weekend of 2006.
Wow, okay. Yeah,
I gave notice to our CEO in February, and then we moved in July. So quite a bit different moving to the farm. We promised the kids didn't want to move to the farm. They were very unhappy with us that we ripped them out of their school and all their friends in Nebraska and moved them here, and there was no way they were living on a farm. So we compromised. We moved into the city.
That's also
into Bermuda Run, and we they were happy with that because it had a pool and a country club attached to it. So that was a good thing for them. And then again, we still were the worst parents ever.
But we are not above bribery.
Yeah. So we bought them cell phones.
And we got to be cool parents then.
Yeah, I would think, especially in that time.
Yeah.
That was really cool to have a cell phone as a kid. So, yeah. Yeah. So, Shadow Springs opened in
the spring of 2008. We actually opened up the doors here at Shadow Springs with a very small wine list. And through the years, it's grown to a large wine list. But we did open up with probably 6 wines, 5 or 6.
So, now, when did Windsor Run come into the picture?
Well, Windsor Run was 2011. Actually, they were Buckshoals, and we were partners with another winery in the area, or another vineyard in the area on a winery, and we had a 5-year commitment with that, and we decided that 5 years was up, we wanted to do our own thing. So we really had plans for a winery here at Shadow Springs, right across the pond. We had plans drawn up. We had an event center and a large winery planned. And we were going forward to that when Terry Crater passed away from Buck Shoals. When he did that, or we were talking, he wanted to sell his location to us, Buck Shoals, but we really weren't interested in that. But when he passed away, Joanne didn't really want to run the business anymore. It was really more of a Terry passion. And so we looked at it hard again for the winery. It had a lot of things that we were looking for, and the bonus was it had a working and permitted distillery. So we thought, well, maybe we can buy that, and that way we'll have instant winery. And so that's kind of where that came to place. We really didn't really want a tasting room. We just wanted the winery. But when we looked at the tasting room, we thought, well, maybe we can expand it. We closed it immediately, and maybe we can expand it. Maybe we can have a second location as long as we had different wines. We didn't want to have the same wines in 2 locations.
Right,
it just didn't make sense.
We're just over 1/2 mile away from each other, so
right.
That just didn't make any sense. So we just decided to have like the alter ego. We kind of had our wines already planted, our grapes already planted, and our wines established by then. So we decided to use some of the grapes they had and then pull up some of them that we didn't feel were producing and put in some new grapes. So we decided to put in some different grapes up there as well. So we have pretty much everything is unique up there and different than it is here. We have a Cab and we have a Merlot. Those overlap a little, but the style is different. And then we planted some more hybrids.
Yeah, we ended up taking out half the vineyard the first year. And we did plant more Petit Verdot. And like Jamie said, we left the Merlot that was there. We left the Cab Sauv. It's right in front of the tasting room. Mm-hmm. Even though it showed stress, it took a lot to bring it back to life, if you will. And then we ripped out most of the vineyard in the back, planted Petit Verdot, planted more Treminet, a grape called Valbon Muscat. So we really changed the landscape of the vineyard, and then the winery needed some work. We put in osmosis system. We put in several things that it didn't have, but it worked. It worked well.
So what differentiates the profiles between Shadow Springs and Windsor Run?
Windsor Run is more of our fun location. It has some of the funner wines that we think, some of the more experimental stuff that we're doing. We have a very talented winemaking staff that has very creative ideas. And I think one of the things that we're very, very happy with them is because they come to us and say, what do you think about adding coconut to wine?
Ooh.
And we have a very eclectic, diverse clientele that loves new things and loves different things. So for us, it was, okay, this is where we can experiment. This is where we can play. And we can still keep some traditional wines up there for traditional wine lovers. Remember, the premise is we want two separate locations. And I think that was the premise of what we decided to for the new Windsor Run.
So Windsor Run's a little bit more on the fun side. How would you describe Shadow Springs then?
Probably traditional, but with a little twist of fun. I don't want people to think I'm not fun. but you know, when we started, we did start more traditional. So we have Chardonnay and we have Viognier and we have several dry reds. And then we kind of went out on a limb early on and put some chocolate in one of our reds. And that kind of became a thing. So we're not afraid to kind of push the edge a little bit, but for the most part, I feel like there are more traditional style wines at Shadow Springs than Windsor. But you have to have a balance because you just never know who's coming in and what their tastes are going to be. So you want to kind of be able to please them, whether or not it's their very favorite, maybe not, but you're hoping that something that you offer them will be their favorite.
Cool.
So awesome. We're early on, we discussed of what type we wanted to be, and we really didn't want to have just super dry reds. Even though we have them, we wanted to be able to offer the customers more.
Sure.
Just because a customer is not a super red dry drinker doesn't mean they're a good customer, or doesn't mean that they're not a good wine person. It just means that their tastes are different than ours.
Right.
And we felt that we wanted to be able to give them the respect, if not us, of what we're doing. So we have multiple different dry, medium, sweet, but.
And now you mentioned the distillery also. So talk to us a little bit about some of the products that come out of there.
The distillery, it was a bonus when we bought the winery, and we really didn't know what we wanted to do with the distillery. It was there producing some spirits for fortification. So, I've always, always, always loved the port that came out of there. They do it their traditional style. They don't have the grandfather name, so we can't call it port. They were calling it Midnight Royal, and it was a fantastic wine. And we thought, well, what can we do with this? And then when we opened under Windsor Run, we thought, well, let's see if we can move that around to more of, relate back to the tasting room. So instead of Midnight Royal, we changed the name to Midnight Run. And it is stuck, and people love it. And We have a lot of Midnight Run available, but it's always our number one selling wine because people absolutely love it. It is a true port. And we make our own spirits for it. So it's 100% North Carolina, even the spirits, 100% estate made. So we're excited about that. Other things that we did with the distillery, again, creative winemaking staff. They come up with ideas. They know that they can. They have the tools to push the envelope, and they do. And so with the distillery, with the laws, current laws, when we first bought Buchholz and changed it to Windsor Run, the rules for the liquor tastings, the product that was over 25% alcohol, were not favorable. You couldn't sell anything, you couldn't charge for anything, you couldn't do a bunch of stuff. They wanted a separate building. So we kind of waited and watched, and there are many distilleries started popping up in the state, and also it became more legal friendly. The legislature decided that we weren't going to sell out the back door to children, we would live by the rules that they set up. And so for us then, as Dana, our distiller, says, we went pro. We may have three liquors out of there now. We have three liquors inside the ABC store, which was a very big learning curve for us. They helped us a lot, but there's a lot more laws around liquor than there is wine, and we thought the wine business was tough.
There's crazy laws. If someone purchases the product from our distillery, they cannot actually bring it back through the winery, so they have to have a side door to leave out of.
But we have fun with that. We call it the walk of shame.
We just kind of embraced it.
But they were very helpful for us. The ABC division in Raleigh, the administrator and everything, were very helpful, and they told us that they would help us get through this as long as we both agreed that we had to follow the laws and they worked our way through it. So they knew that more wineries would have distilleries in the future, so they used us as kind of the guinea pig. They told us they want to get it right. But we were over there several times. We had several meetings with them, and they were very helpful to make sure that we did what they needed to do, and for future wineries that had distilleries, what would work for them as a model. So we were good with that, and they helped us a lot. So we opened the distillery to the public on our spirit side on June 1st of 2017. That's the same day that the brunch bill passed. Mm. The brunch bill, we were allowed before the brunch bill, one bottle per person per year sold through the distillery. The brunch bill allowed us to do five bottles per person per year. Still restraint, however, if someone wanted to buy two bottles, they could actually legally buy two bottles. Right. They didn't need a friend. So now we're working on other laws that hopefully will ease that, and we'll be able to be more friendly to the customer. And that's kind of what we're working on with different associations that we belong to.
But we mostly distill our wine, so it's brandy. But we also have one product that we distill a mead, or we distill the honey. Mm. So that's a very specific and unique product, and they really didn't even know how to address that. So we are distilled spirit specialties under that categorization, because we didn't really fit into a specific area like a gin or rum or what have you. So we kind of liked being different and having our own little classification. And so with the creativity of Dana, the distiller, and Kevin, our winemaker, and all the people who assist us, we're just making some really interesting products there. So we're excited.
That's really cool. Always on the forefront of kind of expanding the industry to new and different.
Yeah. A lot of people call that the bleeding edge, but we've been able to keep from bleeding too bad on it, but we're excited about that. We're excited about new things coming out. We're excited about pushing that envelope. And our customers are too. I think the customers see us as not afraid to get out there. And again, sometimes my favorite story of the winery is one day before we had before we were doing spirits, we were working on a fortified wine. And I walked in, and there were six people around a big tub or big bucket, and they were zesting lemons. And I'm like, what are you doing? He said, we're working on our limoncello. And I told him, you realize how many lemons that you have to zest to make 250 cases of limoncello. And the winemaker looked at us and said, didn't think about that one. So we have a new rule in the winery. We can still think about outside the box, but before we actually start doing it, we have a conversation with Chuck ahead of time.
That's where the logistics comes
in. That's right. Yes. That's right. Logistics works for me for a long time, I know. But with the three winemakers that we have currently, Kevin, Dana, and Elizabeth, we are very excited about their creativity, as long as we can make sure that, like you said, the logistics work. We're good with it. We love that. We love the expansion. We love the ideas. When you walk in and they're looking at you and you know something's coming out.
And they really like to pitch it to me first, because I seem to be the one that's a little more receptive to some of these things than Chuck. And their hope is that I will then relay to Chuck, and that by the time it gets back to them, that he won't be quite as on guard. And our son Justin is actually going to come back and start working with us the end of July, 1st of August. And so then they're starting to circumvent both of us and go right to Justin, so I'm not really sure what if that's out to pasture or what.
So what are some of the challenges of running a vineyard, a winery, and a distillery? And two locations, nonetheless.
Logistics is a good thing for Chuck to have as a background, and the fact that he doesn't really sleep a lot also helps with that. Gosh, I don't know how we've been able to juggle it through the years, but somehow it's always been a manageable thing. We just have to get our ducks lined up ahead of time and make sure that we're all on the same page.
One of the things I've been very fortunate over the years here is we've had great help. Great help. I don't think we could have done near the stuff that we've done without the talents of the winemaking staff, without the talents of the vineyard staff that we have, that are true family members. I mean, we've been around these people for numbers of years, and they are great people, and we join their vision.
Right, and they're so dedicated that they see it as theirs, so that they work hard, because they're not just working
not just employees,
or
right.
to run. They're working because they are also deeply embedded in this whole process. So it's hard to find people that are that dedicated and that true to you, but somehow we've been lucky.
And we've had a lot of help over the years from the industry. When we first got here, we knew nothing about the industry. We know we loved wine. And that was a basis behind everything, and farming seemed fun. So we were very, very fortunate that when we got to North Carolina, we met the right people, and they kind of embraced us and kind of took us on the ride. And for us, not knowing as much as we probably should have, it gave us the ability to create something here and continue it because of all the help. And I think that's why we want to give back. It's very important to me that if someone comes up and they need help, that we help them. I'm heavily involved in the North Carolina Wine Council, heavily involved in the North Carolina Grape Council, and that is my way of giving back. I'm a businessman from years back, and I was a very competitive businessman. And all these people came to help me right away. And there were, in my opinion, there were competing vineyards, competitive nature that I had. I couldn't believe that these people were actually helping me. So we let this happen for a couple years because we need a lot of help. And then we were at a grape council or a wine growers meeting once, and we were having fun, and we had a little bit, maybe too much wine. We were staying there in the hotel, so we were enjoying ourselves. And finally, I cornered a couple of them. I said, why are you helping me? And they said, well, really, we want your wine to be great. And I said, I do too. And they said, but when your wine's great and they come to you, they're coming to us. If your wine's not great, they're not coming to us. So that's why we're helping. And I think I've really embraced that throughout the years, and that's why it's so important to me to give back and to be a part of these committees that help the wine industry. Just like you guys, you're helping the wine industry in North Carolina. It's very important, and you feel passionate about that, and so do we. These people helped us when we didn't know anything. Now it's our turn to get back.
Right. And we have talked to so many people, and it's so romanticized, the vineyard.
Of course.
And I feel it's my job to, I'm the very black and white person, to give them a different perspective. I'm not trying to run them off. I just don't want them to get into it and then hate it. And then go, why didn't you tell us this? So I think it's important. People would say from the beginning, it's a lot of work. Okay, that what does that mean? It means like all-consuming work. You don't just go home at night and leave it. You take it with you, and you do whatever you didn't have time to do at the tasting room that night, or you do book work, and you do all kinds of stuff, and then you go back the next day, and the vines need assistance, or they, you know, it's harvest, it's whatever, it's time to make the wine. So it is not just, oh my gosh, I'm going to show up and, you know, drink a glass of wine and talk to the people. That is, that's what you wish, idealistically maybe, but there's a lot of hard work that goes into it. So.
But like any small business that you have, you have to put the passion in, and you have to put the time
for
in.
Sure.
It's just not something that you go and you punch 8 to 5. You know, we didn't want to. I didn't want that. I did the corporate life, and it was time for not to do the corporate life. I wanted to see if we could do it on our own. Has it been hard work? Absolutely, but
also rewarding.
Yeah,
for sure.
When someone looks across the bar at you and says, "Man, this is good." That's what makes the world go around.
Yeah, or they buy a bottle and they're like, I can't wait to share this with our friends. You know, they're going to love this. And it makes you go, okay, so it's all worth it. And you never know when they walk in who they are, where they're coming from. You certainly can't judge a book by its cover. That has been played out many times, and through the years, we've made wonderful, wonderful friends through this business, and we feel like somehow or another we're still pioneering, but we're making a little mark. So it's kind of cool.
We hear that from a lot of folks. So it's good that
you have
folks,
to have something.
Yeah, true. But it's great that folks are willing to help each other, and because, as you pointed out, your quality also means that their quality is going to go up, and so it elevates the entire region, entire state. So
right, and sometimes it just takes one person tasting one wine that they don't like,
sure.
That they're the mouthpiece that says, "Oh, don't go up there; it's all bad."
Right,
I have no idea if it's all bad or not. So the idea is that you just want to have it so that they can't say that, and then they slowly buy into North Carolina wines.
What's your favorite wine that you've made? I know that's like, everyone says it's like trying to say, well, it's my favorite child.
That's right. They're all of our children, so it's kind of hard to say, well, we really like this one. We really like that one. Our son got married up here a couple years ago, and we had one of our first vintages was the 2007 crop, which the grapes were fantastic. They were great grapes, and we called it wedding wine.
Because we had libraried this amount of wine over the years.
Yeah, and so we had told him that he had a steady girlfriend through high school and through college, and we loved her. And we said, well, we have the wine. So they got married here at the vineyard, and we had several of our wines out for people that were at the wedding, but we had one column called Wedding Wine. And no one really knew it except the bartenders and our son Jason and daughter Kate, that we had this, and we put it out there, special, special wine, and everybody loved it. And we had several people from the wine business here. And when they got a hint that we had some library wine here, we were very, very popular, very popular. So that vintage was very special. But, you know, every one of our wines we spent a lot of time with. We have a lot of different wines from a lot of different styles. But we spend time with each one of them. It's not like a throw it against the wall, see what sticks. It's more of, okay, this is our vision for this wine. let's spend some time with it. We always pull people in to taste it. We always want to know what your opinion is. And then we make the decision, the final decision of what's going in the bottle. Again, I'm not looking to be a dry house, dry red house. And if you don't like my wines, I don't want you to come. I want you to come and experience something here. If your wine is not that big, bold, dry wine, which we have, and we have plenty of, it's just we want them to have an experience. And we want them to be happy with that experience, not to settle for that. So do we have some sweet wines? Absolutely. Do we have some dry wines? Absolutely. We're trying to make sure the experience is good. And the wines are fantastic.
Always important. We have a little guest here. Buddy's with us.
Yeah, that little groan was Buddy.
I think it was actually a little snore.
Oh, a little snore.
Well, at Buddy's age, it's fine.
It's nap time.
Exactly.
So what's your go-to wine then? Like at the end of a long day, whether you're in the tasting room, you've been dealing with groups after groups, or Chuck, you've been mowing all the time.
Yeah, well, so... I'm a little more than mowing these days.
So what's your go-to at the end of the day?
Okay, probably seasonal for me. I like blends, so probably my go-to red would be Heritage because it's a nice blend of our Bordeaux grapes. So I always know that I will like that with whatever I'm having.
And our daughter-in-law, Kate, that's
also
her
loves
own
that.
Wine. She loves that wine. So when we're going to their house for dinner,
we always take,
Heritage. It's very easy.
But we also really drink a lot of the Saval. It seems to be that one for us that is just the very easy white. It's not really sweet. It's not dry. It feels like you just want to sit down and relax. So we do, I think we tend to drink that one a lot.
And then the new rosé, we really love. We've made a dry rosé for the first time in 17. And love it. We're just about sold out of it going into our 18, which we love as well. So rosé all day, that's the new wine, right?
Yeah.
And if it's night and you just are kind of relaxing, there's always midnight wine.
Of course.
Yeah, the midnight wine never really is far from us.
And that's always a fun one to just, you know, when you have company or you have friends to have with them
It's a surprising wine, and when we have people over to the house and we'll pull that out and maybe not show them the bottle, just pour a glass after dinner, and it's just they look at the glass and they say, "This is fantastic. Where did you buy that?"
Well, they don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah, well, they know. Most of them know that come over to the house. They know I have a stash, and so. But it is just a fantastic wine, and we're very, very pleased with it. But we also have some fun wines. Every once in a while, you'll open a limoncello or open a Island Holiday and get that burst of coconut. Mm. I think that those are kind of fun wines that we like as well.
That's so. Always when I'm wishing we could go to the beach and it's July and everybody else goes to the beach. So the vines need us here. So we just have our own little staycation.
That's right. Over a bottle of Island Holiday.
Some Jimmy Buffett.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That or the Chatterita, and you feel like you've been to Margarita.
So now, you mentioned some new and fun stuff. You recently just came out with a new product. Do you want to talk to us a little bit about that?
The brew, yeah.
For us, and we really wanted to please the people. We really wanted to have the experience. So we were having a lot of people come in and... Spouse really loves wine. The other spouse really doesn't love wine. So we try to get them involved with something. And they humor us. And then they look at us and say, "I'm a beer drinker. Why do you bother?" And so we thought, you know, what can we do for that person? We want everybody to have an experience to come here. They usually end up grabbing a magazine and going sitting on the couch and waiting. And we thought, what can we do for that person? And we started experimenting. We're big meat makers. We make a lot of meats for Windsor Run. We make a custom crush. We make a lot of meats custom crush. In fact, our last honey order was almost 20,000 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're bringing this much in. And we've been making meats for a long time. And we were over several months ago, and we were talking about, you know, kind of what can we do for this person? And we thought maybe, well, meat. Well, then the winemakers started coming up with ideas about, well, what if we put fermented with hops.
Right. I think they were on the website, the TTB website.
Because we wanted to make sure, again, we didn't break the law.
And
we really didn't want a beer license. We didn't want to make beer. Because beer and wineries, sometimes there's issues. So we didn't want to bring grain. We didn't want to do the traditional thing. We wanted to do this all under our wine license. That was important. So we've been experimenting, and finally they said, well, I think we can ferment hops with honey, mead, and then, oh, by the way, we can carbonize it. Made it carbonated. And they said, they checked on it on the law, so we can actually make this under our wine license and sell it under our wine license. And I thought, well, let's try one. So we got some kegs, and we got a couple of things that we needed to do this. So we did a test batch, and with one tank, and we carbonated it, and we started talking about it and talking to other people about it, bringing people and letting them taste it. And everybody had a positive attitude. So for us, this was kind of where we wanted to go. We thought this was, but now how to release this? And we had our son Justin and Jason and Kate, our children were involved in trying to decide, how do you promote this? You know, Jamie does a little social media. I do the vineyard and winery. I don't have time for social media. So I know it's important. I know everything like that, but they do a much better job than I do of it. So they thought, let's make a big release. And can we do it over the unofficial start of summer, which is Memorial Day? Well, it's now May 1st. That means we had to make it, carbonize it, get it in tank, get all the stuff that we needed for the tasting room, and oh yeah, release it in 29 days. So we started out with the formulas, we started out with the colas to try to get the TTB label approvals, and we had some issues there, but we got our way through that. And while we were making everything, and we finally got everything done, and we had a food truck lined up, and all of a sudden he had an accident.
Oh,
The food truck got an accident.
So it's always bad.
That was not a good thing. So we
decided hot dogs.
A good American hot dog.
Day go hand in hand, and also really good with brew, which, you know, in my mind is a light beer, but it's actually a wine, which is really hard to explain to your customers. This is actually a mead, which is a wine, but we fermented hops in it, and then we carbonated it. So it has foam, it looks like a beer, kind of smells like beer, doesn't taste 100% like beer, but very, very similar if you want beer versus wine. And so brew to wash down your hot dog, and somehow we pulled it off. Yeah. And released it on Memorial Day, on that weekend, on Saturday. We had shirts made up. This was Chuck and Lisa's brainchild that said Brew Crew. And so we just had a lot of fun with it. So.
And then I had to go to Tanglewood.
And then, yeah, Chuck
I missed the whole thing because we were at Tanglewood all day as well because we committed to the festival and we had to go.
Right.
So we had all hands on deck. All of our children were here. Mm-hmm. They were helping. Everybody was here. We had every staff member working. Everybody was working. So, but we pulled it off and had a great time. It was hot weather, and
it was a perfect day for a brew. Yeah.
Perfect day for
a
brew.
So we are going forward with this. Currently, you can only get it. You can taste it on our tasting bar, and then you can get glasses of it on site. But we don't have any way to take it out the door. We're working to do a dark brew as well. So this is light. So in the end, we hope to have light and dark, perhaps a seasonal down the road, but that is down the road. And then we'll see. Maybe we'll invest in a machine that can make a crowler. I'm not mispronouncing that. Most people go growler. I'm like, no, it's a crowler, right. Like a can and a growler put together. But we'll see. We're not committing to that quite yet.
But it was important to us that both tasters have it because we were tossing back and forth which one should have it, and both of us wanted it. So we decided that we would introduce them both. The brew, the original brew, would be at both locations, and then the seasonal stuff would be different at both locations. Yeah. So it's our goal to have at least three different types in rotation at all times.
But it will always be a mead. I mean, it will never...
We don't intend to make beer.
Right.
But this is close. But we will never make beer.
It's quite tasty.
It is quite tasty.
We were here last year sampling it on the debut. Yeah, and it was very tasty.
Of course, once again, kind of be on the edge in a completely unique and different product. But for us, it fills that void that we thought we had. And it's brand new, so we haven't had tons of feedback yet. But so far, feedback has been positive, and people are drinking a glass of it. So that's all we can ask at this point.
That's awesome.
And then we have people come in, the same thing. The spouse loves wine, and you have the other spouse trailing behind. And they see that kegerator there, and all of a sudden, eyes light up, and they say, what have you got? And we say, we have something for you. And I think that's our big thing. We want something for you.
That's awesome. So what would you say is next then? So that was the latest innovation, but what do you think is on the horizon for either location?
Well, we have some things that we're working on, some things that we've announced, some things that we haven't announced, but they're new and innovative. We have a new port coming. This new port was produced in 2010. It has been sitting in barrels for over 9 years. So Jamie and I weren't involved in making it. Dana was there, and he made it. And it was part of the transition between Buchholz and Windsor Run. But we thought we really wanted to make a 10-year-old port. We really thought that, and we started to taste it, and it was phenomenal. The problem with it is we only had two barrels, and we had lost in those 10 years over a third of it.
The angels were happy.
The angels in our winery are extremely happy.
And they may or may not be named Dana.
That's right.
No. Let's hope not.
But for us, we tasted it, and we thought, wow, we could either blend this in our ports in the future, or we could make a special. So we've never had a grand reserve here. We've had a couple wines that we thought were phenomenal that we named reserve, but we've never had a grand reserve. And a 10-year-old port kind of fit that bill. So we've got special labels printed up. We're going to actually, our first time we've ever numbered bottles. We think we have right around 670 bottles. But we've never also done a 500 mil bottle.
Oh, okay.
So these are all new to us. So we have a 500 ml bottle, we have a special label, we have a port style bottle that will be in a T-top, something, again, we've never done. Hmm. So this will probably be out late summer, but we want to get in the bottle because every time we test it, we lose a little more. So we've got to get it in the bottle soon, but we're very, 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 very excited about that. We believe we'll release sometime end of the summer. So,
can't wait for that.
Yeah, it'll be fantastic. Now, our regular Midnight Run is a blend, 3-4 years old.
Right.
But we have a lot to choose from. Currently in the winery, we have about 2,200 gallons of port in various stages of years and aging. So we have a lot to choose from. Very, very excited about the future there. But we've got some other things coming out. We pulled out our little still, and we're doing some... different things with it now, so hopefully that will be out soon. The production still is what we use most of our thing, and we've had this, we've been taking pictures with this little still for a number of years now. People love to take pictures with it, the copper still that sits in the corner and everybody hugs it and gets their picture made. Yeah. Well, we thought, well, we wanted to try a sample of something, so we pulled it out, run it for a sample, absolutely loved the sample, blended it with a couple of things, and thought that was the way to go. So we used it again and again to get what we needed to get. And so we're in the process of final filtration, final blending, and then we'll be bottling a new surprise coming up probably some end of June.
Oh, cool.
Hopefully we can get it in the bottle end of June. If not, it'll be July. So
it is June 2nd.
Yeah, time flies. Flies.
So what's left the biggest impact on you in being in the wine industry?
Well, a couple of things. You know, we had a budget. I'm a business guy. I do budgets. I do marketing plans. I do spreadsheets to try to figure out exactly what we can do and what we can go forward. And I had a plan, and I looked at all the material, and I had a plan, and I had a budget going forward, and I realized, if you're going to come into this business, my new advice to everybody is, figure out what you need and triple it, and then you may be able to survive. So,
I think my biggest impact, and I was hoping you weren't going to ask me a question like that, because it's so hard to answer, but I think the biggest impact for me has just been the people that have come through our doors through the year. I mean, we've made friends, and we've seen people pass on, and that hurts, and you didn't know these people to begin with. And we've also, you know, had weddings, and we've been in joyful times with people. And so I just think that's a broad question, and that might be a broad answer, but I just think it's the people that have made the most impact on me.
And it's fun to see somebody, like we said earlier, it's fun to see somebody across the bar enjoying what you produce and saying, this is fantastic. And we've had several experiences with that. Like Jamie said, we've had weddings here for multiple years. Now they have to bring their kids back, and they look at their vine. We do an Adopt a Vine program for that here, and they look at their vine and teach their kids about that. We've had engagements in the vineyard. Our son got engaged in the vineyard here.
And because we're now farmers, we thought we would capture that. And so what did they use? Oh, let's go with a deer camera.
We had several.
Mounted in the vines, not obtrusive at all. But
well, we knew it was coming, and we knew he told us about it, and we knew what time it was coming. And he planted a vine out here, his first vine. That
when we first planted, we let our kids each plant their own ceremonial vine, as we did our own. I mean, we planted more than one, but we really wanted to plant all 7,000 of them.
We really wanted to plant the first one, but we were late getting here. So our first one is actually planted in row three.
Row three. We're the first one on row three, though. So Jason said he wanted to propose at his vine. And so we thought that was pretty cool. But he didn't ask us to video it. But we thought eventually he might want that.
So we set up two digital cameras and a video camera in the vineyard, and we caught
some of it.
We caught some of it, but we should have
put a big X on the ground as to stand here. But
well, we did catch him kneeling down, and we did catch a little bit of the proposal with the audio that we had. But it worked. It worked, and then they got married here after that. So. But we knew it was coming. It was kind of fun.
That's awesome. So what do you think the future of North Carolina wine looks like?
Well, we've invested a fortune here, and we believe that the future is bright. North Carolina has come a long way. We've seen it come a long way in the 15 years that we've been involved. And I believe it will continue to grow. We're involved in a Quality Alliance program here. We are working with North Carolina Wine Growers and with Surrey Community College, and we are putting all of our wines through it, as many of the other wineries are. We're hoping that the Quality Alliance and what we need to push quality-wise to have people accept our wines, this will be an important step to do that. So we are... We're pushing for this. We believe that putting your wines through this is very important, getting the sticker and making sure that people believe. And then we have to educate people on the quality of what the sticker means. We are working on that. I'm working hard with a lot of other good people to make sure this happens. I believe that, and our continuing push for quality is what we need to do.
Yeah, quality is what's going to get the state's wines recognized. It's going to put us on the map. Not that we aren't already, but it's going to really lead to more advanced spreading of North Carolina wine.
I agree. And that's why we're working so hard. Again, part of our give back program is we want to push this, not only for our own wines, but for the state wines. We want to make sure that. We're also involved in the State Fair Wine Competition. We're bringing more legitimacy to that, bringing some help. I'm on the Grape Council, which actually runs it. We're working hard to make sure that is a quality setup, and we're very, very pleased with that. We're including all wines from the state in it, which I think are super important for the state.
Absolutely.
So we're kind of winding down on the questions here. What is it that you want visitors to either of your locations to know when they come to visit you?
For me, I think that we would like for visitors to know that we, number one, are so glad and thankful that they come to us, and that they spend some extra time with us and kind of learn about what we're doing, and that they are hopefully at the end of it a little more educated, because being a former teacher, I always feel like I need to throw in something if I need to explain Meritage, or there's always something that you can teach people. So, and they oftentimes don't have a clue. So, number one, that they will have a fun experience and that they will enjoy the wine, but that they will learn a little something too.
And I think that's important. We want to make sure they have a great experience here. We have a beautiful setting. People can relax out here. They can love life. They can be with people that they love, that they like, they're having fun with, and they can be around a beautiful setting to help them that. We have some great wines, and they want to come back, and they want to tell their friends about it. You know, the best advertising you can get is word of mouth.
Absolutely.
And we are super excited that we have a lot of ambassadors out there that say, you gotta come here. This is a little off the beaten path, but it's worth the trip. It's worth the trip. And that's kind of what we want to do. We also want to make sure our wines are very different between the two. We want the experience to be very different between the two. We want people to enjoy that. We're not going to judge what wine you're going to drink. We're going to give you a choice. And hopefully you will find several wines that you like. And so far it's worked. We're in the black, and that's a good thing.
Well, that's awesome. Well, Chuck and Jamie, thank you so much for speaking with us today. We enjoyed the conversation. We did learn something, Jamie, so you can take that back.
Okay, yes.
I think this has been fantastic. So,
well, thank you very much for being a part of what we're trying to do in North Carolina.
Of course.
You guys are great, and we really appreciate it. Well,
thank you very much.
Here's a quick update from Chuck and Jamie.
All right, so we're here with Chuck and Jamie from Shadow Springs and Windsor Run Cellars. So, Chuck and Jamie, thanks for coming back. It's been 5 years. What's been going on?
Gosh, a lot's been going on. We're trying to remember back 5 years ago. That was before the world ended and the pandemic happened. And since then, during the pandemic, we made... hand sanitizer in the distillery, so that was really interesting.
We learned a lot.
We learned a lot during that. Yeah. Let's see. We planted a few more acres of vines. We planted our first ever Tannat. We planted that 2 years ago, and so we should get something next year off of it. And then we planted another acre of Petit Verdot, we replanted. We pulled out a little bit of Cap Franc and Merlot and planted Chamberson.
And we'd taken out Viognier, planted Petit Mansang, which we now have, and we also planted some more Sauval Blanc because we use a lot of Sauval Blanc.
Mm-hmm.
We used to just make wine out of it, and now we distill it as well, and also use it as juice to sweeten back some of the wine. So the vines produce a lot of grapes, but they're also getting older, and so we just needed some more fresh vines. So we have changed a lot in the vineyard. What else have we done? We have new people. We have some new staff.
And
in the distillery especially.
Yeah.
Dana is still with us, but very limited. His wife had some health issues, and we were lucky enough. I don't know how you find another Dana, but we found another Dana. His name is Jeff, but he is amazing and has really stepped up things in the distillery. We have made some new items there, but mostly we got a new still, which gives us the ability to do more things.
Yeah, and one of the things is it's an electric still. so we don't have to worry about the insurance was having a real problem with us with a flame burner. And then 12 feet later, 170 proof liquor coming out. We didn't seem to have a problem with it, but they did. So they wanted us to do all these crazy things into the winery, and we decided that that probably wasn't a good idea. So I said, well, what, can we just buy electric still? And they said, well, yeah, that'll work. So electric still we had, and we've had that for about a year and a half now, and it's amazing. We've done some custom distilling now for other people too, and a lot of fun. We're having a good time. We have a couple of things in the works for the winery and the distillery. That was before the glitter wine came up.
Glitter wine.
We made some muscadines. We had a little muscadine left over from a customer, so we bought it, and we said, okay, now what are we going to do with it? And we saw a few meads online that had glitter in them, and they were selling pretty quickly, the guy said. So we thought, well, let's put glitter and see what happens. And we have sold glitter wine.
Our winemakers are very adventurous. So we started with snow cream, and then we went to
crystal dreams.
A strawberry kind of a flavor. And then we last year added Plum Crazy, which is
purple.
Yeah. So I think you can only have so many glitter wines, but they are fun.
We sold out of our 2010 and our 2012 port at Windsor, and we have a 2015 that we bottled. That's 8 years, again, our standard 8 years in the barrel, and then bottled it. So it's for sale now.
You can buy to taste that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's delicious.
It's good.
Delicious.
And then we have been pretty fortunate the last few years in some state competitions and stuff. So we have the cup that we got to keep, and then it again.
The massive cup, yeah.
And then they made a new cup, and so...
we've got that.
Guys have been... I mean, they've just been working really hard. We have... new guy in the vineyard, Will, that is doing a really nice job, our vineyard manager.
Yep.
And it takes a village or a team, so they bring in good fruit. The winemakers are, you know, doing a great job in the winery, and we're bottling some really nice wine. So we're excited about all that, and we just came off of the year 2023, which we had an amazing fall. No hurricane waters and things like that. So we actually harvested into mid-November, which was crazy.
Our first time ever we harvested November. We harvested actually four grapes in November. We're on vacation by the 16th and jetting somewhere. But this year didn't happen to do that. And a good thing, because we were harvesting.
Yeah, and even the Petit Mansang.
We had a white Petit Mansang. We harvested half of it for one, and the other half for
late harvest.
And November in North Carolina, that's late.
That is very late.
That's a late harvest.
In fact, it was getting where it was getting freezing at night. And we were like, we probably need to, expedite this process. So that's all happened.
We also brought in for that particular wine, it's going to be a port wine, white port on some of that, and we brought in two Sauterne barrels.
Oh, nice.
So they're 15-year-old Sauterne barrels, we have that wine in them. So we fortified it, and it's sitting for the next couple of years, and
resting happily.
Yeah, we do sample every now and again, but we're super excited to see what a Sauterne barrel does. When we brought in cognac barrels, we brought in different kinds of Hungarian and different size barrels through that, but we've never had a Sauterne barrel. So we asked our French connection, who's getting us all this stuff, and we said, can we get a Sauterne barrel? And he said, sure, but they're expensive. I said, sure, what isn't? So last fall, we got two of them in, and they're fantastic. So we put the Windsor Run or the logos on them, and they're, like you said, resting happily.
Yeah.
Excellent. That sounds like something to look forward to in a few years.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're excited.
Well, it sounds like you've been up to a lot in the past 5 years. Anything else you want to recap?
We have a grandbaby.
We have a grandbaby. Our first grandbaby was born a year ago today.
To do with wine, but that's something that's new for us.
And it's all part of life.
Exactly.
That's right.
I don't.
I'm sure we're missing.
I'm sure we're missing something, but those are highlights for certain.
Listeners should go on out and visit again if they haven't been.
For sure.
If they've been, go back again.
So. Please come back. Yeah.
Great to catch up with you two again.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
That's it for this episode of Cork Talk.
Thanks again to Chuck and Jamie. It was fun catching up with them again, and we encourage our listeners to head back out and taste all the great wines that you can find at Shadow Springs and Windsor Run.
If you like this episode, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave us a rating and review. It helps others find Cork Talk and lets us know how we can improve.
And don't forget to follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram at NC Wine Guys. Until next time, and remember, a cork only talks when it's out of the bottle. Cheers!
Cork Talk is a Free Run LLC production.
This episode is made possible in part by a grant from the North Carolina Wine and Grape Council.
Pour a glass of your favorite North Carolina wine, mead, or cider and enjoy all that North Carolina wine country has to offer. To plan your trip, download the NC Wine app or visit ncwine.org.